We're sitting here today in GSA Media Studios talking with Mark Auld, who is the Senior Program Manager in Games for Windows Support. Why don't you go ahead and maybe give us a little bit of an intro there.
Right. So my name is Mark Auld. I'm, as you've said, a Senior Program Manager, and I've been working for Microsoft now for about 6 years on various projects with support from the Games for Windows area, working on projects such as Age of Empires, Rise of Legends, Flight Simulator, to other home productivity software such as Microsoft Encarta, Microsoft Digital Imaging, and the Works products. So I've kind of had exposure to a lot of different kinds of products.
Cool. And it's mostly been kind of within that whole productivity and games kind of realm, pretty much.
Exactly. So while Microsoft has a lot of different customers, from businesses to, you know, small business education, you know, I've worked pretty much with just the home users that are looking to use fun and exciting software instead of the whole office or office kind of, you know, worker application. So it's been a lot of fun.
Cool. So in your role, I'm assuming that you do quite a bit of content sourcing and that kind of thing, and working with the agents, essentially trying to help provide them as much good technical information as possible to help the customers on the other end. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Right. So a lot of my work comes well before the launch of a given product. Let's say, for example, the launch of Rise of Legends, which came out recently. We did a lot of work before the launch just trying to discover what issues were customers going to see, what kinds of technical problems could we run into, the boundaries of our supported hardware and what machines we were going to run into. And then the experience that the customer is going to have when they run into a problem with the game. So that was kind of our first step to discover what those issues were, what that experience is going to be like for the customer, and then write content that would appear on support.microsoft.com that would be easy to find, easy to walk through, and understandable, so that when I search for an error message that happens on launch of the game, I can see that, oh, maybe my video card is too old, doesn't have enough memory, need to update a driver, or something happened during the installation that's preventing it from running. So we just want that to be as seamless as possible. So we need to make sure that's all ready before the launch, and then after the launch or during that process, we work very hard to kind of integrate that into training our agents and the people that would be providing technical support for the product, make sure that they're playing the games, that they're, you know, run contests and tournaments for the game so that, you know, everybody's excited to participate, and really just kind of build up the excitement and build up the knowledge at the same time. You know, it's always said that, you know, from support agents to customers, if you're excited about a game, you're going to play it, you're going to do everything in it that you can, and you're going to become the expert. You're going to be, you know, ready to help people fix their machines or answer questions on how to play it. So that's kind of what we're trying to get, you know, when we're preparing for that launch, is to build that excitement and make everybody, you know, really looking forward to the launch of a given game.
Cool. So you've mentioned a few times that there's some focus on gameplay, as well as your standard error messages or installation issues and that kind of stuff. Has that been a fairly recent focus change? I remember a long time ago, back whatever 8, 9, 10 years ago, when I was supporting Flight Sim 95, it was mostly, you know, we were kind of limited in what we were able to support as far as, you know, getting the game running, but not necessarily tips on flying, that kind of stuff.
Sure. Well, honestly, the differences between some applications can make providing usability support a little bit more challenging. So, for example, if I am playing Age of Empires and I want to know how to advance more quickly, or how to build a trebuchet or a certain unit of soldiers, that can often be a really easy question. And it's very easy to kind of build that knowledge with the agents. And we want to encourage that, so that even though we're not really a source for tips and tricks for playing the game that, you know, you got someone on the phone, you want to chat about the game, you know, we'll do, you know, everything that we can to answer your question. Flight Simulator is a whole nother animal. You know, we get customers that call up that are like 10, 15-year veterans of, you know, piloting and commercial airlines, and, you know, some of them have, that have worked on building the aircraft that we have modeled in our game. And, you know, when going through training for that, you know, we're not putting all of our people through pilot training, as much as we'd love to do that.
Right.
I honestly would be really, really excited to go through that kind of level of training. But, you know, we just can't do it. And so with a product like that, we really try and encourage using the in-game documentation and the kind of the missions and lessons within the game to kind of push that product knowledge. And we do take a step back, but we want to make sure that we at least have the understanding of, you know, using the instrument panel, you know, what the VOR is, you know, ILS and approaches, and understand how to use the key functions of the program while not kind of delving into everything involved with being a pilot.
Right. So, kind of focusing on the core aspects,
exactly,
essentially.
Exactly.
Cool. So can you maybe give me an example of how you interact with a product group while you are sourcing content in prep for a launch of a game?
Sure. So the product group, usually they're the easiest folks to work with because they're, you know, they're working on their program, they're working on their game, and they're just excited to talk about it. And so, you know, I will go over to, you know, the building that they're at in Redmond, and just, you know, start chatting with people and start understanding, okay, what's being worked on right now? What do I need to focus on? Where are the problems at? Where do we need to be prepared to help customers and support? And just kind of get an overview, be it, you know, in the hall conversations, meetings, looking at the technical documentation that comes out of the product groups, and just kind of gathering all these sources and speaking with as many people as possible so that we're really prepared. From that, we'll kind of take the knowledge that we gain from each of these different sources and then start digging into, like, our product studio databases, kind of the databases where we keep track of product issues and kind of look through to see, you know, what do we need to be ready for, what's going to be a challenge to support, what is going to be a big issue versus, you know, here's something that it would be a challenge for anyone to find that given problem. And then, you know, we not only create the documentation for it, our technical KB articles, our training documentation, but once that is out there and people begin to contact us on problems, we're right back there and saying, hey, look, we're getting a ton of people that are calling us on this issue or that issue, or a lot of people have this video card, or we're running into this particular error message, or people don't like this. And we're back there saying, hey, you know, can we fix this or can we change this? And really just pushing to make sure that, you know, the customer experience is as good as it can be, even if it's, you know, updates or future versions, but providing that feedback once customers do begin to contact us.
So some support feedback has resulted in patches and stuff like that?
All the time. I would say, you know, when you go up to the sites for your games and you see those lists of stuff we're fixing in, like, patch 1.04 or 1.05, you know, that's all coming from the customer. So, you know, when you know, myself, if I'm a customer and I contact support, you know, I want to know that not only do I get my issue resolved, but they said, hey, you know, people are calling on this. Maybe we should get this fixed. You know, that's something that I want to know. And so that's what we're trying to do.
Cool.
Yeah,
it certainly helps with, you know, call deflection and reducing the overall cost of support, and of course at the same time it's kind of a win-win situation because it, you know, satisfies the end user as well, without whom the product wouldn't have been bought anyway.
Sure.
Right.
Yep.
So
there you go.
So are there other areas that you also source content from?
Yeah. So not only just getting the feedback from customers as they contact us over the phone or email or chat, but the wide varied information that exists on the internet, like the forums that are hosted off of some of our game sites, or even just the general news groups that exist hosted on the Microsoft servers. So we'll get feedback on what issues customers are contacting us on, or even just product requests from the Microsoft news groups. I'll read through the games for Windows news groups, as well as sometimes the Xbox news groups. That can be a lot of great information. Forums on other sites. And not just that, but the MVPs that we have going through that information and trying to help customers. Those guys are just, you know, super passionate about improving the product and answering questions for customers. And they're fantastic sources for information on, you know, not just where to, what articles to write or how to create online web content, but also for that product feedback portion where we kind of push for what issues need to get fixed in future versions of our products. And then finally, we'll have feedback that comes from the OEM or system builder partners. So we can, on occasion, contact like Dell or Gateway and ask them, hey, you know, are you getting calls on, you know, this particular game or this particular application? And are customers frustrated with how the application's working? Do they ask a lot of questions? And just try and get some feedback from those sources as well on how to, you know, on how to improve support.
Cool. So the exposure of that content, is that just on support.microsoft.com for the most part, or is it also integrated with the specific Microsoft game websites, kind of similar to the way the Xbox.com group works?
It's a little of both. So we like to host most of our information off of support.microsoft.com, and we'll create what are called the solution centers, where you can go to support.microsoft.com, select your product, and then you'll see kind of a web page that divides up all the different kinds of issues that you might run into. If I'm having a multiplayer problem online versus a problem with setting up a joystick versus a problem with the installation, those will all be kind of divided out in the areas so I can find the topic that I'm looking for as quickly as possible. So if I go to just the product pages like www.microsoft.com/games and I click on one of the new games that came out like Age of Empires or Rise of Legends, then there'll be support sections on those websites, but for the most part they try and redirect you back to support.microsoft.com. And that's not because we think that's the, you know, the greatest place to get information. We want to try and spread it around to any place that customers will try and access it. But we try and keep it centralized so that if we update content or an article here, that everyone that's pointing to this website will then, you know, benefit from that update.
Cool. So in my long experience in the games and hardware world, there was, it seems like a huge majority of our pain points early on were within the video driver realm and consistent updates of the hardware and, you know, new chips and, you know, new graphics capabilities and X, Y, and Z. And I've noticed far less problems lately as technology has definitely improved. But is that still pretty much something that's really difficult to keep up on?
Absolutely. I think that's going to continue to be our top issues. Unlike in the console world where, you know, an Xbox is an Xbox and everybody's got the same hardware, the benefits that you get from being able to customize your Windows PC and say, well, I don't want to spend that much on a video chip, or I want to spend a ton of money on the video chip and have just, you know, screaming fast graphics, you know, that choice then limits the kinds of games that you can play. And we'll see a lot of challenges there because we often do release games where we want a lot of people to be able to play it, and so we do tone down the graphics. And then other times we'll release just the cutting-edge new game, and it only runs on the brand-new video cards. And there's a lot of people out there that will, you know, grab the box and say, wow, this game looks great. And, you know, it just isn't easy to say, oh, these 50,000 video cards are not going to work with this, but these, you know, 150 it does work with, or, you know, whatever the number is. We can't have that whole big list off of the box. There'd be like, you know, one of those sleeves that unrolls like eight times into the aisle
right.
before you'd see, oh, is my video card on this? So it's really tough to be able to do that. And DirectX kind of helps us out. Mm-hmm. And we'll be able to say, okay, we need a DirectX 9.0 compatible card. And that's very easy to say. Or we could say, you know, we require Shader 2.0, or we require hardware transform and lighting. And those are things that are very easy to find out if your video card has it. But, again, it's not always written on the documentation for your computer if you just buy a brand-new OEM PC like a Dell or Gateway, for example. So that continues to be a challenge as, you know, new games come out, but, you know, we only have a kind of a limited scope of video chips that we end up supporting.
How much of your, or how much interaction do you have with the IHVs, the independent hardware vendors like NVIDIA and ATI and such, in generating support content?
We try and keep a good contact with them so that we can be aware of when driver updates are made available or when they make a fix that can affect our game. But what I will say is that it kind of operates independently. They kind of just fix their things, and we watch their websites and check to see if anything is resolved in newer versions. But from their perspective, they can't test all, you know, thousands of video games that came out recently and make sure that every single one of them works on their video chip, although they do test the big titles. And that's really when our interaction can become the greatest, when we know we're going to launch the latest and greatest version of Age of Empires. That's a pretty big release for us. And, you know, NVIDIA wants to get involved. They want to, you know, be able to test it out and make sure it works for us and be able to tell what cards it's supported on versus older cards that it's not supported on. So that's a good opportunity for us before the launch of the products to understand where our support is, you know, what is within support and what's outside of support as far as video hardware goes.
Cool. So I know that just last week you had the opportunity to attend the E3 Expo.
That's right.
I assume that it rocked.
Oh, it rocked. That would be the technical definition of E3. Yeah, that was my first time at E3, and I was completely unprepared for the scale that convention is on. So for those of you that don't know, E3 is the Electronic Entertainment Expo. It happens every year in Los Angeles at the convention center, and it's just the biggest video game convention entertainment like gathering that known to mankind. It's just incredible, and it's 3 days long of just, you know, lights and media and announcements and new games and just, you know, total excitement. And myself as a gamer, it's just like, you know, I'm ecstatic. You know, I'm like a kid in a candy store when that convention is happening. So
right.
you can suffer from a lot of information overload, as, you know, there's just literally thousands of games there for you to play. But it's also a great opportunity to see what's coming. You know, I had a chance to see a bunch of really great games and great announcements that, you know, that's really exciting and is going to be kind of changing the whole industry. You know, in my area of, as games for Windows, you know, even a game that, you know, someone comes out with that, you know, has nothing to do with Microsoft, they're still releasing it for the Windows platform, and that's going to kind of grow the platform and going to, you know, push push gaming and push technology further and farther. And that's what's really exciting about attending that.
What was your biggest takeaway from the convention?
Well, there's so many takeaways.
Yeah.
Like I said, I went with...
Which one do you choose?
Yeah, what do you choose? Like I said, when I went, I was trying to focus mostly on the games that would run on Windows. And so what I did find is there is a significant shift to games going to consoles. I've found that over the years, we saw a lot of games releasing for Windows, and I think that's kind of going down as we see more games releasing for consoles like Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo, etc. And the games for Windows platform is kind of turned into your real-time strategy, massive online multiplayer console in and of itself. It's like that's the platform that you see those kinds of games on. And then for the most part, you're seeing a lot of the first-person shooter action and essentially everything else released for consoles, as much as we can put on consoles as we can. So I did see a lot of massive online multiplayers there.
Yeah, the massive online multiplayer games, I'm sure, are rather difficult to support, as it's a persistent world, and things are constantly changing, and the customer base is constantly changing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you? We've supported a couple in the past, back when Asheron's Call and Asheron's Call 2 was around. What do you see for support in the future of games for Windows?
I think it'll be similar to what we've been doing in support for those kinds of games in the past. It is a real challenge, unlike a CD product where you've got your installation and then, whether the hardware supports it and then maybe any usability questions that come up during that support engagement. But for a massive online world, you've got people that are paying a subscription, and that's its own kind of support area. Oh, maybe my credit card's not working, or, I couldn't play for a month. Can I get a refund for that amount of time? And those are all the kind of billing support concerns. Then you've got your technical issues that we're very accustomed to supporting, such as hardware support, performance. Is it running fast enough on my machine? Is there problems with launching the game or any other technical issues going on the system? And then finally, there's a whole other kind of new support experience that you have in the game. Is am I having problems completing quests? Did I get stuck inside of an object? Maybe I can't find a place that I'm trying to go for a particular quest. Did I lose or drop an item? Did I run into some sort of quirk in the game that prevented me from doing what I wanted? And then there's that whole interaction with other people. Sometimes online people aren't so nice, and you've got to have somebody there that can assist with that and kind of police the population of your online world and make sure that everybody's having a consistent and fun experience. So all of that is a huge support concern, and we really have to be ready for that on the launches of any new massive online multiplayers, because all of those together are just seen as support. Nobody's really thinking, oh, I, had a great experience with my billing support incident, but, I had a problem with getting a hold of someone for a technical issue. That's all just support. And so we have to make sure that each one of those areas is really solid, that, we're answering questions and we're resolving issues quickly and giving customers the help they need. So
what was the coolest thing that you saw at E3?
Oh, that's another really tough question.
Another what do you choose?
Yeah. But I had an opportunity to sit in on the technology, really the game demo for Will Wright's Spore. That's a game for Windows coming up in the near future. And that was just amazing to see. I'm a gamer myself, and I'm totally going to pick that up. That's going to be just, it was just amazing to see a game that has that kind of scope of, you know, beginning as like a single-celled organism swimming around in the primordial ooze and kind of ends with a spacefaring race that's exploring the galaxy, just that whole scope.
Interesting.
And a game where I can zoom in to see the leaves on a plant or, you know, the small microscopic organisms, and then zoom all the way out to the galaxy level and looking at, like, nebula and, you know, star systems. And that's just another really exciting technology to see in games, to see things on that scale. And I think that not just for that game, but for kind of the future of games, seeing how that was done and how you could kind of customize your character, customize your creature, you know, move around different objects and just kind of, you know, exist in this world was really amazing to see. That was just super, super exciting. I was so stoked to see that.
And what was the most bizarre thing that you saw at E3? I have to ask.
So the most bizarre thing I saw was in one of the halls where they had a new peripheral. They would hook up this sort of headband with these electrodes, and as you were playing this racing game, it would increase or decrease the speed of your vehicle based off of the amount of brain activity that you had going. I'm not kidding. This was real.
Wow.
I saw people sitting with the controllers and the headbands, like, squinting as if they were trying to do complex math in their head so their car would go faster. And that was truly bizarre to see. But it almost made me want to try it. I'm like, I don't know how it would work. But that was very strange.
That would definitely be really interesting to support.
Oh no! It's like my vehicle isn't going fast enough. It's like, well, are you thinking of something hard,
right?
Like complex, or it's like, try doing some math. I don't know, hum some Mozart.
Yeah. Compose a symphony.
Compose
go
a
faster.
Symphony in your head.
Just that simple. Yeah. So for the most part. At E3, I know a lot of focus was on the Xbox 360 world, but within the Games for Windows world, was it mostly focused on upcoming stuff that's happening on Vista only, or was it all kind of like cross-PC, cross-OS, rather?
You know, I've got to say that most of the upcoming games from Microsoft are really going to focus on Windows Vista. There's a lot to take advantage of there, and we really want to kind of pioneer that and push for games using the new technology that's available within Windows Vista. So that's kind of that side. From a lot of the other companies that, especially the massive online multiplayer style games, they were mostly going for Windows XP support, but also available inside of the Windows Vista realm. So I think about maybe E3 next year, we'll see a lot of games that are coming out from third parties that would take advantage of a lot of the Windows Vista capabilities. But I don't think we saw that this year just yet.
Does it seem like, at least from what you've seen so far, does it seem like it's going to be more complex or overall easier to support games for Vista?
Oh, it's going to be way easier. I am really, really excited for some of the, not just the support capabilities within Vista, kind of our built-in easy assist platform, the My Games feature that kind of houses all of your game information, and kind of the enhanced graphics that can interact with the new version of DirectX that's going to be available in Windows Vista. But also, and, you know, it's interesting to say this, as the newer computers come out that can run Windows Vista, they're going to be better machines, and they're going to be more capable of running games. And so that's going to be good in that Vista is built for the new PC. And get that machine, you're going to be better shape.